number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Click and Wound studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See abroad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack on jackal. Oh, got to be
next time.
Time is the right time.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Click and Wound Studios, here's Tony D.
So we're done with the college football season after Monday night's win by Alabama. And here they come. Column after column after column after column after column after column. If I saw one, I saw 100. Look at all the money. Look at all the money college football brought in. Look at all of the people getting paid. My God, there's a strength and conditioning coach that makes $650,000 a year. There's a defensive coordinator that makes 2.5. There's a head coach that makes 7. Everybody's got their hand in the gigantic cookie jar, and the only people who don't get paid are the people on the field. Oh, my God. Okay, listen. I hear your cry. You know how I hear your cry? I've been hearing this forever. It's like the laziest sports topic in the world. Two things in this business I try to avoid. Does Pete Rose need to be in the Hall of Fame? And should college athletes be paid? But every now and then they'll pop up if they're in the news. But every year I see the same stories. And you know what? In a couple of months we're going to see them again when the NCAA basketball tournament comes to an end. And people will cry and cry and cry about the poor athletes that don't get any money. And you know what? There's a legitimate argument to be made that these athletes should be paid. And I'm actually on board with that. Here's what I'm not on board with. Because I want to challenge the national media to do something. What I'm not on board with is retreading the same column after column after column after column. Now, one of the things that we do in this business, and newspapers do it too, is we like to repeat stuff. You have an ever-changing audience. For example, I do 3 hours a night. Some of you that are listening now aren't going to be listening in 20 minutes. Some of you in 20 minutes aren't going to be listening in 2 hours. Clicks are the same way. I put an article up on the website now. If I can repeat, change that a little bit in a month or two, I can get my message across. Keep it fresh. Keep it fresh. So I understand that angle. But here's what I want to challenge the national media to do. Do what I did. And I don't pat myself on the back very often, but I am on this. If you really are lamenting the fact that college athletes need to be paid, stop bringing attention to just this one issue. This one tried angle that keeps coming up year after year, almost to the numbification of your audience. We get it. There's a lot of money. We get it. They're broke. We get it. They're not paid. We get it. We get it. We hear this every single year, every single year. But do what I did. I'm challenging you. Make a stand. Say the things about college athletes. Give them the options. Vocalize those options. Urge them to go those options. Tell Leonard Fournette to not return to Baton Rouge to play next season and to sit out a year before he can go to the draft. Say those same things to Deshaun Watson. Say those same things to other athletes who are freshmen and sophomores who are putting up heck of a year, that they keep going back to the same system that causes you to write those columns of poverty and, oh, woe is me, student athlete in the first place. Urge them to do these things. Give those athletes that kind of leverage. Give them that kind of support. I would love a player to do that and make a big deal about it and make it national. I would love for it to happen. I would love for a college basketball kid to do it instead of going for his freshman year. Say, no, we're not going to college for 1 year to work on our basketball skills. We can do that at this academy, or we can play overseas, or we have other options for that 1 year. Now, some athletes will say, listen, I want the experience of playing at Kentucky and being a king on campus for a year. Fine. But give the college athlete an option to stand up for the system that they so much deserve to have changed. Now, college football will go on without Leonard Fournette. It absolutely will. LSU football will still sell out without Leonard Fournette. But at least the message is going to start getting out there. Stop stop lamenting the fact that these players have only one recourse, because they don't. There's not just one place for them to go. If you're Leonard Fournette, you can go work out in the academy. You're going to get drafted a year later. Start making that pitch. I'm not kidding. If more and more columnists would do this, it might catch on, and maybe just a couple will do it. And maybe we can start thinking about other ways to change this system. Because crying about all the money that everybody's making because the student athlete's getting robbed doesn't answer the problem. Here is the problem. You want student athletes to get paid? You want those Alabama and Clemson players to get paid? Fine. But they all have to get paid. They all have to get paid. Not Alabama, not Clemson, not Oklahoma, not Michigan State. Everybody. You can't give a reward system out there in order to, you would skew the competitive balance tremendously. You can't say if you play in a national championship, you get $100,000. You know how insane that would be? What kind of recruiting classes Nick Saban would produce year in and year out? I mean, you already think it's sick now. When all these kids have to do is just be in uniform for a team that has a chance to win the national, you want to talk about super teams. No, everybody has to get a piece. Everybody does. After all, everybody's part of the system. The NCAA basketball tournament gives out money to the winners, to the schools, but guess what? Every school gets money. So you have to pay the basketball players, and you have to pay the football players. And because of Title IX, you got to pay the female swimmer too. But that's never in these articles. That's never in these columns. The idea that, yeah, there may seem like there's money here in this national championship game, and oh, how it's sick that these guys are bathing in so much cash, and Jacob Coker doesn't get a dime. But if Jacob Coker gets a dime, then Jeff Driscoll at Louisiana Tech gets a dime. And so does every other football player and golfer and swimmer and track and field guy and shot putter and anybody else that plays in the college athletic system. They get money too. And all of a sudden that pie is not so big. No. Do you want to give the players that are on that field a voice? Give some of them a voice. Tell some of them, don't go back. Don't go back. I don't want to see Leonard Fournette play one more second of free football. Not one more second. I don't want to see anybody play one more second of free football once they've established themselves. You want to go make a name? All right. That's a chance you take. But once you start getting the heads of everybody, where everybody starts looking at you saying, hey, that's the guy. That's a guy that could do this, this, or this. I would love for Deshaun Watson to step away, but who in Clemson is going to propose that? What columnist at the Anderson newspaper in outside of Clemson, South Carolina is going to pitch that? The Independent Mail. Who's going to do that? He'd be lambasted if he suggested that the star quarterback, the guy that said, see you in Tampa, decides I'm going to go chill. Then I'll go play pro. So it's going to have to take some different voices. Look, and I don't mind the argument. I don't mind hearing about the argument every now and then because it does produce something. Look, one of the happiest post-game speeches where I had a smile on my face I ever heard was when Shabazz Napier said, we go to bed hungry. Because I thought this was the perfect place for that. Amidst all of the money, he reminded the nation, while you had fun watching us and picking games in a bracket pool, we don't have any food most of the time. And that was great. That was great. I would love to see more columnists say, you know what? And I think I'm going to start pitching a little bit more player advocacy in this system. I think it's needed. And again, but don't just go, here are the numbers, here are the poor players, blah, blah, blah. If I heard it once, I've heard it 100 times. I saw too many of those. They're easy to write. They're lazy. They don't tell us anything new. Give us something new. Give us a different angle. How do you do this? How does it happen? I'd love to see players get paid a little bit of money. I'd love to see the players get paid a little bit of walking money. But you know what? That's a better, it's a more difficult conversation than I think people realize. Because Alabama can give out money, but can Chadron State give out any money? All right, speaking of the college football national championship, there was one big winner from Monday night, and it's a guy I bet you thought would never win again. That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, so the national championship game had Alabama winning the title, but who was the big winner in that game? Want to take a guess, Adam, who the big winner of that game was?
You know, I heard you say it right before the break, and I was kind of racking my brain.
Somebody that you probably thought, oh, man, I can't believe he's back on top again. Golly.
Mr. Saban?
Nope, that's not Mr. Saban. How about Mr. Lane Kiffin?
I was just going to say Lane Kiffin.
Who, by the way, got left by the bus.
Was left.
Which is really cool. Apparently he was busy yapping, and the bus left without him.
I could just see Saban on the bus just like, damn it, just leave. Just go. He can walk.
But Coach Kiffin is... Go. Go.
It'd be even better if he
He's running
out.
Behind the... Go! Faster! Go!
He's like got the trophy, running with the trophy. Like, guys.
Lane Kiffin is the... He is the... God, I think I used this one time before. He is the Rasputin of assistant coaching or coaching. You can't kill him.
No.
Like, his career is just not going to die. No matter how many times you go, all right, Lane Kiffin, that is too far. He has gone too far. That's it. You're never going to hear from him. He pops up, and then he finds his way back on top. This was a guy at 34, 33 years old. Was forcing Al Davis to fire him. Just showing up in Oakland to be the head coach of the Raiders, knowing he wasn't wanted, knowing that they didn't want to keep him on board, yet said, I ain't quitting. You got to let me go. And they let him go. So here he is. He's 33. He becomes this head coach in the NFL, fails miserably at it. Now you would think, oh, okay, learned his lesson. Go back to be an assistant coach somewhere. Go chill out for a little bit and just, you know, learn, you know, you're young, you know, learn a little bit. Nope. Jumps right from that job to one of the top coaching jobs in college football, being the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. And they loved him for it. Oh, my goodness, did they embrace him. He goes to the press conference. He talks about how we're going to beat Florida. Remember, Tebow was at Florida at the time. We're going to be playing Rocky Top in Gainesville. They were losing their minds for Lane Kiffin. Then, on that one night, he goes, yeah, I've had enough of this. 1 year, he goes, gets his dream job at USC. He buries the town of Knoxville. He needed protection. People were so angry. And instead, he left them, and they had to go get Derek Dooley to be the coach, who I liked at the time, shame on me, and set that program back, and Butch Jones is still recovering from the mess that the Kiffin-Dooley era had left the Tennessee Volunteers. So he goes to USC, coaches there for a bit, gets fired on a tarmac by Pat Hayden. Where does he go? Does he go chill out for a little bit, relax, just live in Malibu somewhere until another opportunity comes? No. He becomes the offensive coordinator at Alabama, of all places, where he has taken both Blake Sims and Jake Coker to championship-level performances. Now, I know they didn't beat Ohio State last year, but Alabama was at a championship level from their quarterback. He is now, once again, one of the hotter assistant coaching names for head coaching jobs. And guess how old Lane Kiffin is? Now, you would think, if I didn't give you the age at the start of this ordeal, you would think this was an aged veteran. Head coach of the Oakland Raiders, head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers, head coach of the USC Trojans, offensive coordinator at Alabama, besides being the offensive coordinator at USC in his early years. Why, my God, this guy must be an aged veteran. No, Lane Kiffin is 40 years old. 40 years old. And when some coaches are just starting to learn their potential, just starting to make names for themselves, just starting to emerge from the shadows of their mentor to become head coaches at other places, Lane Kiffin is laying back in a chair going, oh, top programs in the country? Been there, done that. NFL? Been there, done that. Yeah, I'm 40 years old. I may contemplate a return to the NFL, you know, just to get it right. That's Lane Kiffin's resume. And he is the big winner of the national championship game, outside, of course, of Saban and the state. But if you're looking for that big winner of, my God, he's on top again, it's Lane Kiffin. But let me tell you something. The way he groomed Jonathan Crompton in Tennessee, the way he groomed Matt Barkley, the way he groomed Blake Sims and Jacob Coker, who wouldn't want Lane Kiffin with their quarterback? You can say all you want about some of the arrogance that and books have been written. I mean, reams and reams of paper have been written on the arrogance of Lane Kiffin, the entitlement, the snottiness and what all that. I don't know if any of that's true or not. I've never even met the man. I think I covered a Colorado Buffaloes game that he was coaching. But you know what? That guy can coach offense. He can coach offense. And players swear by him. So Lane Kiffin turned out to be the big winner. Guess who was not the big winner on Monday night? Besides, I don't know. I wouldn't put even Clemson as the biggest loser because they played great in a losing cause. Deshaun Watson earned a ton of respect even from this South Carolina Gamecock. You know who the big loser was on Monday night?
No.
ESPN.
Yeah, ESPN.
15% drop in viewership
this
for a
whole,
game that was one of the best we've had in the championship.
Yeah, this whole bowl season, I don't know what it was. The whole thing and overall.
The big headline was this game drew a less rating than Duke, Wisconsin. And listen, I'm a big college basketball guy. I love college hoops, so I watch. I don't care who's not watching or whatever. While I'm not surprised, I did think college football covered the peripheral fan more than college basketball does. I always said, like, look, everybody's into March Madness when the tournament starts because they fill out their bracket. But after a while, those people die out. Those people sort of move on. You know, they are either in their tournament or they're out of their tournament. By the second round, your office secretary ain't paying attention anymore. Right. But the diehards stick around and then you get to the national title game and it's your diehard basketball fans and maybe a small percentage of the periphery. College football, I thought, was casted a wider net. This might be a regional thing. You know, you know, Alabama and Clemson, this isn't Oregon, Miami. OK, this isn't Penn State, USC. There's not a lot of distance compared to other cities in America between Clemson and Alabama. They're in the same geographic region of the country. So I wonder if people in Portland just went, I don't know. People in Oregon just went, I can't do this. Just wake me up. Tell me who won. But they missed a great game. I mean, that was a fantastic game. All right, coming up next, Bill Huber is going to join us from PackerReport.com. Earlier this week, I said, is there fear in the other teams now that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers may have found something in their game against the Redskins? I don't know. They did look good, but we were never high on the Redskins to begin with. Well, Devontae Adams is out, but Aaron Rodgers seems to be a little happier. So if I'm the Arizona Cardinals, how much do I have to worry about the Green Bay Packers? After all, in Week 16... the Packers were throttled 38-8 by Arizona. Will this change for the playoff game coming up on Saturday night? Bill Huber joins us next, PackerReport.com, on them Green Bay Packers. I'm Tony D. It is the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D. on the third shift.
It's Tony D. with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. All right, continuing to look at the playoffs coming up this weekend. Saturday night, the Green Bay Packers head out to Arizona. Bill Huber joins us from PackerReport.com to give us the latest on the Packers as they get ready for this game. How are you, Bill?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. All right. Let's talk right off the bat. The Davante Adams, his injury. It doesn't look like he'll play Saturday. What do you know, and how much is this going to affect the Packers?
Well, if, you know, if you'd asked me this question a month ago, I said, well, it's not going to affect him at all because he's had a lousy season. Through, I think he's, he hurt his ankle in week two, and I don't think he really got over it and hurt his confidence and all that, but he was just starting to get back in the swing of things. So, like, a couple nice plays against Minnesota in week 17, and, three or four nice plays against the Redskins. So it's a big loss for a team that already lost Jordy Nelson in the preseason and Ty Montgomery in week six. I mean, they're down to scraps in a receiving game, and that's not what you want when you got beat by 30 the last time you faced those guys.
When they played the Redskins, there was a lot of conversation going into that game about how the Green Bay Packers were struggling and there was frustration on the face of Aaron Rodgers. What did you take out of that game against Washington? Can we say that the Packers' offense is back, or was it just one good game and we still have to wait and see?
Yeah, I think it's wait and see. What was Washington? They were like, I think they were 17th in points. So, I mean, it's a lousy defense where one starting cornerback was Will Blackman, who returned punts in Green Bay for 4 years, but never really played defense. And, so he's not an NFL caliber starting corner, and their nickel guy was the guy who played receiver in training camp. So, obviously, the Cardinals don't have journeyman corners and receivers turn corners in their starting lineup. So, I mean, it's a whole different challenge. If you ask me to buy or sell, I'm still selling. I'm not buying. I think it was just a byproduct of feasting on a pretty bad defense.
You know, when teams struggle and they're losing and things aren't going right, I get that frustration sets in. But for Aaron Rodgers, how much was he just frustrated, and how much of that was more than just losing and struggling?
Well, you know what? He took over as a starter in 08. So, before this year, he was 7 years as the starter. He entered the season ranked number one in passer rating, number three all-time in yards per attempt, and, number three in... God, I'm drawing a blank. Anyways, big time numbers. With the all time leaders, and I mean, just something he's not used to. His entire career he's had, star studded receiving cores where he'd go to the line of scrimmage and he'd go pick out his best matchup and he'd throw the ball against that matchup and it'd be success. Week after week after week, and now, without Nelson, with all these other guys, he goes to the line of scrimmage. I don't think he has any idea where the ball is going. So yeah, I think that frustration has mounted as the weeks have gone on, where it's just...
Bill Huber joins us, PackersReport.com, as we get ready for the Packers-Arizona Cardinals coming up on Saturday. Bill, from the game a couple of weeks ago, I think it was week 16 out in Arizona, what was the biggest matchup that kind of was worked against Green Bay in that game?
Arizona's DB smothered their receivers, and Rodgers, well, it was both quarterbacks, but Rodgers got sacked 8 times to get up a total of 9. They'll be better off there. In that game, they had Don Barkley playing left tackle. He's got no business playing left tackle because their starter was hurt. And either their starter, David Bakhtiari, he plays this game, or it'll be J.C. Treader, who gave up 1 sack against Washington, but for the last 3.5 quarters was pretty well spotless. So they'll be better off there. And they lost their right tackle, Brian Bulaga, halfway through that Cardinals game, too. And so I think that was the big deal with the sacks. It was just, it was just bad matchups, but... we're going to go back. We're just going to keep talking about receivers here. I mean, they put Patrick Peterson and Randall Cobb a fair amount, and that took Cobb out of the equation. And Green Bay's receivers just aren't good enough. And so, but the combination between their coverage and their pass rush, if you take the sack yardage off of Rodgers' numbers, Green Bay averaged 2.03 net yards per passing play in that game. That was the second worst figure in the entire league for the season.
And sometimes even good teams have a game where just things don't go well and we lose players and we lose scheme. But when you look at that game, do you say, all right, there's some adjustments that the Packers can make, but even with the adjustments, it's a hard game for them to win?
Yeah, I just, Arizona's defense, I think, is the overwhelming advantage. And, Carson Palmer is going to be, finish in, the top two or three of the MVP race for a reason. He's had a phenomenal year. I mean, what is he, 27-4 in his last 31 starts or something like that?
Yeah.
I read that in the Cardinals pregame stuff. I mean, just off-the-charts kind of stuff. Green Bay has got a long odds here. But look, Palmer will throw you a few passes. Seattle picked him off a couple times last week or the last 2 weeks ago. So he'll give you some chances. And Green Bay's guys, they dropped 5 picks against Washington, but, it's been a ball-hawking kind of group here for years, so... If you're looking for a reason for hope, I would say it's that where, maybe he'll throw you a couple and you get a cheap touchdown and hang around that game for a while. So I give Green Bay a chance at it, but it's, you know, they're gonna have to have a bunch of things go right that really just really haven't gone right for them all year.
Is there anything right now that the Packers are really holding their hat on as something that has been consistently good the whole season?
You know, people will laugh at, if you look at the run defense numbers, people are going to laugh at me like I'm an idiot. But, you know, by and large, they played on a snap-to-snap basis. They played good run defense this year. You know, they've given up a big play here and a big play there in a couple big games. But, you know, by and large, they played good run defense. So, you know, if they can keep Arizona to, you know, third and six, third and eight, that kind of stuff, you know, then you can go, then you can pressure and do your all your pass rush stuff that you want to do and kind of dictate things. So, David Johnson's a heck of a good running back, but if they can hold him in check, and you know what, and they did that first game too. They can hold him in check, then you got a chance to kind of dictate things on third down. I mean, maybe you got a fighting chance against that offense. I would say it's Green Bay's defense, starting with the run defense, that gives them a shot.
How is the running game? If they don't have the receivers and that gets ruined again, is there a running game that the Packers, is that improved? Is it getting better? How is their running game?
Up and down. It is just the most unpredictable thing in the world. Is how, you know, they, you know, 4 weeks ago, McCarthy took over the play calling against Dallas, and they ran for, you know, a couple hundred yards against the Cowboys, and everyone's saying, hey, the run game's back. Well, you know, 3 games after that, they did nothing at all. Then last week against Washington, they did nothing in the first half, and then in the second half, they ran for like 120 against them. So it's a hot and cold unit. But Lacy and Starks have shown they can run the ball. It's a pretty good 1-2 punch. So maybe they can run the ball. I don't know. Like I said, it's been up and down. If they have their starting five on the O-line, obviously helps things, but I don't know. It's a week-to-week sort of thing there, for sure.
Jared Aberderis, is he going to be the guy that replaces Adams here in the lineup? Is that how they're going to go?
Seems that way. I mean, that, you know, last week, I think he had 24 snaps or 28 snaps, and the other guy had 5. So, you know, a few weeks ago against Oakland, Rodgers came, they beat the Raiders 30-20. Rodgers came out of that game sounding like they had lost. He was just, you know, frustrated as all get out about how that game went. But one guy he liked was Jared Aberderis, who, you know, played a fair amount, had 3 catches and moved, you know, had a couple good plays there. He's a guy that Rodgers likes. They seem to be on the same page. You know, Aberderis has, you know, got a knack for getting himself open. So I think there's, you know, well, there's not much of a track record. There is some chemistry there.
Bill, overall, this season, it seems like when there's injuries, it becomes more of a challenge, and this is a tough league to overcome some key injuries. But overall, does that explain the 10-6, or are there some things that Green Bay needs to work on? Are there some guys that needs to be removed and replaced? When you see this season, what do you see?
I see Jordy Nelson is, you know, the tremendous value there. You know, last year he had more. I might have used this on your show before, but he had more 60-yard touchdown catches last year than 30 of the other 31 teams had 60-yard passing plays total, touchdown or non-touchdown. I mean, unbelievable stat. I mean, look, you don't have to go to D coordinator school to figure out what to do next. If you can't throw it deep, you know, the corners take away all the underneath stuff, and then you're just, you know, up a creek. So I think it shows the value of the deep threat. If you get him back, if you can just stay healthy with the O-line guys, I think you're okay. This is a defense Packer fans have wanted for years. This has been a bad defense for, you know, since they won the Super Bowl. Now they finally got a good defense. The special teams are pretty fair. If they can just get the stretch the field element back in this thing and keep defenses from putting guys in the box to stop the run because they don't fear the deep stuff, I think they'll be fine.
Bill Huber again, PackerReport.com on the Packers as they take on Arizona Saturday. Always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great night. Thanks.
And again, that was Bill Huber, PackerReport.com, as we continue to look at the NFL playoffs, which I think is going to be some pretty interesting games. I'm not liking the Steeler game coming up with the Broncos. I mean, the more I get reports out of Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger's got a torn shoulder blade or whatever he's got. He was on a radio show talking about sprained shoulder. Gah! Antonio Brown doesn't look good. D'Angelo Williams is not going to play. So the Broncos, I mean, everyone's saying, look, Peyton Manning's coming back from injury. The Steelers are too banged up to put up a fight. I don't think that one's good. But I don't know. That Seattle-Carolina game's good. And Kansas City is that's an upset alert in Foxborough. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Well, if you'd like to play the trip down memory lane game with us in this segment, feel free to do so. 800-777-2907 or on Twitter at Tony D Radio. And we are going down memory lane in honor of the Rams relocating or restoring, depending on how you view it, to Los Angeles. We decided to go back and look at some of the other franchises that have relocated. And maybe some of them are memorable. Maybe some you totally forgot were actually relocations. But nevertheless, I didn't go back too far. Like if you go back into the Major League Baseball history, like teams bounced around all the time. So I didn't want to go back in like to the 1920s when it was like, hey, it's the Philadelphia Athletics. Yeah, I get it. But I decided to do some things that were more recent, maybe in my lifetime, ones that I remember, the impact. So there are plenty of relocation stories out there. There are plenty that go back, you know, 100 years, but I just kind of kept this recent. So are you ready?
I am.
Trip down memory lane. Let's start in the NFL. Of course, when you talk about the Rams going to Los Angeles, you have to talk about the Rams leaving Los Angeles. And they headed to St. Louis at the time where the LA Raiders were also going back to Oakland. So it was kind of a double smash to the town of the city of Los Angeles. Oakland went back to LA. Oakland went to LA and then back to Oakland. Now, Oakland actually won, or I should say the Raiders actually won a Super Bowl while in Los Angeles. They won Super Bowl 18 when they beat the Washington Redskins. So they actually gave the city at least one Super Bowl title and a very cool silver and black look that dominated a lot of the 90s. But how about Baltimore to Indianapolis? Is this before your time? Because this was 84.
Yes, this would have been the year before I was
born. This was before your time. This is when the Colts left for Indianapolis in the middle of the night, right. The famous middle of the night thing when the Mayflower moving vans were at their facility and they loaded them up and just took off. And one day you woke up and the Baltimore Colts were gone.
What happened?
Which I guess is a cool way to do it.
It is.
If you're going
really
to do it,
cool
you might as well do it that way, right? Rather than make a big spectacle out of
it.
Do you
think they have like a meeting? They're like, let's do this in the middle of the night. It'd be really cool. A lot of people will talk about it. We'll talk about it for years. That'd be awesome.
I got to see the documentary. There's a little bit of a documentary on it. I think one television reporter got wind of it and went down, and that's where you get the film, that snowy footage of the Mayflower vans moving out. I think it was one television station that had gotten like a tip that this was going down. Like, this is, and again, I mean, I hate to be that old man, like back in my day, but there was no Twitter or anything to know if you had to rely on the loyalty of your viewing audience to go, hey, wouldn't Channel 3 really like to know that there's moving vans at the Baltimore Colts facility?
That's probably the biggest story guy's ever broken still to this day.
Oh, sure. Right? Exactly. And then, of course, the NFL said, well, you don't have to wait that long. About 15 years later, they gave them the Baltimore Ravens. I think it was actually 10 years later. They gave them the Cleveland Browns. So the Browns moved to Baltimore. And this is the thing. This is where, like, the Browns got their team and they got it back and everything. But the Ravens won the Super Bowl with the players that used to be Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
So you can only imagine how painful that was.
Right, because it's Cleveland.
Oh, you can keep the history. We're going to give you this crappy expansion team, but you can keep the history. Ravens win a Super Bowl. Yeah, good. You keep
Cleveland's still waiting for that title.
Good. I hope you enjoy the Brian Sipe record book. Go ahead. Keep that around. We're going to shine our two Super Bowl trophies. You know, the team with no history in Baltimore. Right. Yeah.
Trent Dilfer.
Then there was Trent Dilfer. They won a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer, and the Browns couldn't win one with Bernie Kosar or Vinny Testaverde. Gosh. Oh, God. God help
them. Cleveland. It's
Houston.
This is what they do. It's
of course, right?
It's just Cleveland.
The Houston Oilers moved to Tennessee. They actually stopped in Memphis for like a year or two before they moved to Nashville. But the Oilers then got the city of Houston ended up getting the Texans as an expansion deal. So that city wasn't distressed all that much. I as a Steeler fan, let me tell you this. As a Steeler fan, the Oilers under Warren Moon used to scare the snot out of me. Oh, God, I used to hate those games. Even when I was younger. The early days of the Steelers, that Houston team with Earl Campbell was very, and Dan Pastorini was very scary. So I've always had a little soft spot in my heart for Houston. When the Steelers won a wild card game at the Astrodome with Gary Anderson kicking a field goal, I loved it. And then St. Louis again, not only losing a team today to the city of Los Angeles, they once lost a team to the Arizona, as you know, to the city of Arizona, the city of Phoenix, city of Arizona. Listen to me, listen, it's late the night. City of Phoenix. It's late. Yes. Forgive me if I don't get the verbiage correct. All right, so now let's go to the NBA. Most recently, the relocation of the NBA was New Jersey when they went to Brooklyn to become the Nets, which I always thought was kind of cool. Minneapolis was once the Minneapolis Lakers, so they moved to Los Angeles where there are no lakes, but still retained the Lakers. My favorite, this name doesn't make any sense, the New Orleans Jazz moved to Utah to become the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake, you know, a bastion of jazz music.
Right. I mean, if you think jazz, you think Utah and Salt Lake City.
Utah, Salt Lake City.
The Mormons.
That's right.
Just, they bleed jazz.
No reason to change the nickname. Just keep it that way.
Keep it riding.
Kansas. When I was a kid, I used to collect basketball cards along with baseball cards, and Topps had a set way back, like Larry Bird's rookie year, 81, that it was one card that you broke into three little pieces, and each little sliver was a card, and that's how the cards were. And I remember the Kansas City Kings were a team of my very, very young youth. They ended up, of course, moving to Sacramento. I think the Kings were multiple teams at one point, but I remember the Kansas City Kings. And of course, San Diego went to the Clippers, and Vancouver, the Grizzlies, Sarah McLachlan loved, by the way, the singer, they moved to Memphis. The last Major League Baseball team, I may have had this wrong, there might be another I'm missing, Montreal to Washington, where they became the Nationals.
Don't forget NBA, Seattle to Oklahoma City.
Oh, and of course, Seattle to Oklahoma City, that was on my list and I missed it. Thank you, producer Adam.